So today we have Roy Biancalana, and he is an expert at relationships. He's the author of Attract Lasting Love. He's actually a best-selling author and also a host. So we're so excited to have you on today.
Yeah, it's good to be here, Kim. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, very exciting. So really, I want to start with, how did you get into this work? How did you become a relationship expert?
Yeah, I got in here through the back door, actually. I never had a vision of being a relationship coach or an author, or, you know, having my own podcast or anything like that. I got into this because I was married for 19 years, and that relationship just turned into kind of a platonic kind of co-parenting functional type of relationship, but there was no man woman stuff in it. Okay. So after 19 years, you know, we went through a divorce, and I immediately, of course, you know, typically just rebounded into another relationship, which was just the opposite. It's kind of all sexual, you could almost say, which at the time was kind of wonderful for me, but I was just rebounding in that. And so I was with her for 2.5 years. We were engaged. And then 6 months before the wedding, she broke up with me. And that absolutely destroyed me. I had what I call like a 1 year long midlife crisis. Mm-hmm. I mean, heart palpitations and sleepless nights and obsessive thinking. I wasn't a very good father at that time. My profession really suffered. I mean, I was a mess. And then, of course, looking back on it, it's sort of funny right now how I handled all that. I guess I was just doing the best that I knew how to do, maybe the only thing I knew how to do. But yeah. I did what I would never counsel someone to do. And that is, I just joined a bunch of dating sites to meet new women to help me forget about the last one, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So I often joke with my clients that if you just do the opposite of everything I've done, you're going to be just fine, okay? So, I rebounded out of my marriage, and then I just got on all these sites and met these women. And of course, at the time, I thought I was actually available, you know, and I was ready for someone, but I wasn't. I mean, I was using these women to sort of help me forget about the last one. So I wasn't present. I wasn't really emotionally available for them. And so then you can imagine the amount of drama that mm-hmm. that led to. Mm-hmm. Okay, just some spectacular amounts of ridiculous dynamics that I created. So in the middle of all that, a friend of me sort of suggested that maybe I should work with someone. Like, Roy, maybe you ought to, you know, hire someone and talk about your love life. Nice. Because this is one of the funniest things, but it really is instructive here. Up until then, I really thought that my love life was a mess and it wasn't working out the way I wanted it to because I just hadn't met the right woman yet. Mm-hmm. I actually blamed all the women. I didn't recognize that I was the common denominator in all of the pictures, and that maybe perhaps it had something to do with me, that maybe I had some blind spots, that I had some childhood conditioning issues that were playing themselves out, that I had relationship personas and phony, fearful ways of showing up in the world. I actually thought it was all them. Okay. So, yeah. My love life really pivoted at the exact moment that I started to think that it was me, to either to just look in the mirror, to start to wonder, what's my part in this? What am I doing to create these dynamics, to attract the women that I did and the patterns and the problems that I did? And since then, I have found that that is very common. That most people look at their love lives and they point the finger and they don't necessarily want to look at themselves in terms of taking responsibility for what's happening. Mm-hmm. So that was a major shift. And that's the major shift I think anyone really has to make if you want to change your life. As long as you're pointing out there and it's you and you did this to me, and I mean, you have no power over that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. But when you look in the mirror and you start to see that, oh, there's some things I was doing, maybe unconsciously, I wasn't aware of, that was creating this nightmare, that you empower yourself with. Because if you're creating the nightmare, you can change it. I often say, if you're writing a lousy love story with an unhappy ending, you could write a new love story, mm-hmm. if you're taking responsibility. Incredible. So I got into coaching because I hired a coach in the midst of all that. And the only question was like, why is my professional life going pretty good, but my personal life is awful, right? Mm-hmm. So that was so transformative for me, Kim. The questions that my coach asked me, the path she led me on, the work that I did with her changed my life so dramatically that when I came out of that, and I worked with her for about 2 years, which, you know, in the coaching world, that's a lifetime. I mean, sometimes in the therapy world, you can go on for years and years, but in the coaching world, you know, it's get down to it. What's the root issue? Right. Do you want to change it? Let's move on. Right. Yeah. But it was like 2 years, but it changed my life so much that when I came out, I was like, I want to do for other people what my coach just did for me. Mm-hmm. Right. I want to work with people who are at their wit's end about their love life. Like, why can't I attract a good relationship, or why can't I make it last more than a couple months, or what am I missing about myself? You know? So I love working with people who are at the point where they want to look in the mirror.
Yeah.
Because the things that I did, it wasn't like the gods smiled on me. I didn't get lucky, because now I'm married. I've been married now 13 years. I'm in a great relationship, and it's not because I've gotten lucky. It's I asked a certain set of questions. I looked in my heart in certain areas, and I worked on certain things that are transferable. Nice. So I just tell people, if you ask the same questions I did and you work on yourself the way I did, you can have the same results I've got, because I'm just not special. It's more of the process that I did. And so that's why I'm a coach. It's why I've written 3 books. It's why I've created a podcast to try to share these ideas for people who are willing to look in the mirror.
Oh, I think it's incredible. It's absolutely key to take ownership and to look at what you actually are doing to play out these dynamics. And a lot of times, like, we can make a big shift just by our change in the dynamic. Not every time, but a lot of times. Depends on what the other person's doing as well. I love that. Yeah. So you have something called the Relationship Groundhog Day Syndrome. What is that?
Yeah. It is the dynamic that most people are familiar with, where you feel like you're in the same kind of relationship over and over again. Like, you're with the same kind of partner, having the same sort of problems or the same patterns or the same pain over and over again. And that's really one of the things I was experiencing in my relationships. And what I discovered when I was working with my coach is even though we didn't talk a lot about my childhood, I was able to identify that I developed with what I call a relationship persona, okay, from my childhood. Meaning, my mother was someone who met our family's needs, but she was kind of distant or a little, she wasn't this warm, nurturing type of mother. She was kind of cold or harsh, demanding, perfectionistic. And of course, as a little boy, I want to be close to my mom. I want to feel some emotional connection. And I just discovered that if I sort of ignored what I wanted or my own needs or so forth, and I just made mommy happy, like, if my life was about fulfilling her agenda and doing what she wanted me to do. In other words, if I was a good boy, okay, and doing what mommy wanted me to do and making her happy, then I felt some warmth and affection from her. Okay. So I developed this good boy Roy thing. I didn't consciously at the moment, I was 4, 5, 6 years old, but right. I was learning that the way you get the attention and the affection of a beautiful woman is you make your life be about taking care of hers, right? You be a good boy. And even in one of my books, there's a chapter called The World's Greatest Boyfriend. It's like my memoir. Okay. So that's what I was. Okay. So I just learned that the way you get a woman to respond is forget yourself, take care of her. So now fast forward, I'm 45 or so years old, and I'm in a relationship with my ex-fiance is a typical example of it. And within like 2 weeks, I'm basically cleaning her house, doing her laundry, raising her kids, taking them to soccer, tutoring lessons. I'm cutting the grass. I'm washing the cars. I'm being her masseuse because she's got this high powered career and she's working 60 to 80 hours a week, mm-hmm. literally mm-hmm. all the time. And she's this overwhelmed person. When I met her, she was, you know, making good money, very successful. She had two kids at home, single mother, mm-hmm. and she was just overwhelmed. And kind of couldn't manage it all, right? Stressed out. Well, what a perfect fit, right? Here I am like this Superman, you know, yep. the world's greatest boyfriend. Mm-hmm. Oh, baby, I'll take care of you. I'll meet all those needs. And of course, I was coming out of a marriage that didn't have any sex. So it was kind of like, I'll take care of you if you sort of take care of me, yeah. right? Yeah. So we created what was really a codependent relationship. Mm-hmm. But the Groundhog Day syndrome is that when I was moving with what I call Roy the Rescuer, mm-hmm. right? If I'm rescuing a woman and doing these things, then I get the attention and affection. Mm-hmm. If I'm Roy the Rescuer, I'm always going to attract women who need to be rescued.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm going to attract Debbie the damsel in distress.
Yeah.
Right? They go together like cookies and milk.
Yes, they do.
Right? Mm-hmm. It's like if you have a mechanic, this is very common for women especially, but men too. They feel like they keep attracting men who are broken down, who are kind of wounded, who kind of don't have their shit together. Yeah. And, you know, and like, why do I keep attracting these kind of guys? Where are the guys that kind of have it going on, right? They've got a purpose and they're grounded and they're available. Why do I attract the guys that are kind of wounded and broken down? Well, because you've got a mechanic personality, mm-hmm. a persona. You're walking around with a wrench. Mm-hmm. And so to be a mechanic, mechanics only work on broken down cars. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a major thing for people to look at in their lives if they find that they're in these patterns. Because I was continually attracting women who were damsels in distress. And yeah. it's because I was moving in that the only way I get love and attention is if I start rescuing and doing things from fear. Because I want to make this clear. If a person wants to express their love by being Mr. Mom, that's totally awesome. But I wasn't doing it from love. I was doing it because I was afraid if I wasn't mm-hmm. that kind of boyfriend, mm-hmm. she would never want me. She would never want to have sex with me. She would never want to date me and be with me. Yeah. So it was all fear-based.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And that's the dynamic that, so I was in Groundhog Day. I go from one relationship to another and I kept telling my coach, why do I keep meeting these women who are successful, but they just can't seem to manage their own lives. It's like, I need to step in there. Like after a while I got sick and tired of, you know, doing her kids' laundry and folding their socks. You know, I had my own life and career and so forth. And she helped me see that they were simply women that I was requiring because I was moving in this fear-based energy that I've got to be a rescuer. So that's a major thing I work on with my clients because most people can identify they're in some weird pattern and they don't necessarily recognize that they're showing up with a certain energy, a certain set of beliefs mm-hmm. that form a kind of a relationship persona, your kind of way of getting love and attention and security. Mm-hmm. They don't see that it's that dynamic that is like a cookies and milk type of connection. And that's why it keeps happening over and over again. So
absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, just to put it in kind of like a microcosm, I think when they are showing up, let's say for a first date, you know, they're going to be over offering, you know, already saying, oh, I could go ahead and show up and help you with that, or I can help you with this, or I can pay for that. Like it already happens and they can feel yes. it. So now you're not open to someone that maybe has more of an abundance mindset or has more going on because you're already over sharing, over offering. Yep. And again, that you're right. It comes back to irrational beliefs. Like I'm yep. only going to be able to keep this person if yep. I can do something for them externally.
Yep. Yep. You yep. just nailed it right there. That was me.
I don't
know how you knew me 20 years ago, but that was me. Yeah. Oh, the amount of money I spent on first dates, impressing women, mm. you know, mm-hmm. And then, yeah, if they reveal some sort of problem or issue, oh, I'll fix that for you. I'll help you with that. If you just love me in return, right? But yeah. but again, a lot of it was I didn't really want to do it.
Yeah.
I just thought I had to do it
yeah.
to get a woman to respond to me. So I had my own insecurities, and that's the work I had to do, that I don't have to be a rescuer. I can be a present, available, good guy that has a sense of himself as much as the other person, right? But I don't need to rescue. I don't need to function in that way. Because then I'll just attract women who are damsels.
I think so. And there's so many reasons why that's important to recognize. But I think the other thing is that if you put someone above you, if you put someone on a pedestal, or even if you're not, but your behaviors are showing them this, and it's perceived that they're higher than you, then the respect goes out the window. And then the attraction starts going out the window too. And then you get to resent them later on. So that's fun.
Well, that's what happens. See, you even predicted, you predicted why it went down the tubes. Yes.
Yeah. So you have, okay, I want to hear, I'm very intrigued by your idea about the law of attraction, because I know you say that it can ruin someone's life. So could you just give me a window into your understanding of the law of attraction and like how it goes wrong?
It goes hand in hand with this, with the relationship persona thing we just described, the Groundhog Day. Good. Is I say that the law of attraction works. It's real. And that should scare you. Okay. Meaning it just means like attracts like. That's really what it means. I mean, there's so much added fluff and weirdness to the law of attraction. We won't get into all that, but it just means that birds of a feather flock together. It means you attract after your own state of consciousness. Mm-hmm. It means that you never attract a relationship that's healthier than you are. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. So meaning, if I'm functioning as Roy the Rescuer, the law of attraction says you're going to attract the damsel in distress and you're going to create codependence. Because you're coming from an unhealthy place. You're coming from a persona of a fear-driven thing, and you're going to attract someone who is doing the same thing in a reciprocal kind of way. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not what I call in my newest book, Relationship Bootcamp, if I'm not relationally fit, if I'm not relationally in shape, then I'm going to attract a partner who is also not in shape. And so the law of attraction kind of works against you. But the law of attraction can work for you if you do the work to get yourself in relationship shape. Because the healthier I am, the more relationally fit and strong you could say that I am, the more I'm going to attract a woman who's on that level also. You follow me? So you're always going to attract on your level. Anyone who says, oh, I was with this partner and I was way more evolved than they were, they're kidding themselves. you're just kidding yourself. Yeah. You're always on the same. It may show up differently, but you're always kind of playing the same game. That's why you fit together, right? You're both playing basketball and you can do that. But you're never in a relationship where you're playing basketball and they're playing soccer. You can't do those together, right? So the good news is the law of attraction can work for you. But all it means is you have to do some inner work. You got to get your, what I call your seven relationship muscles in shape.
Ooh, can you talk to me about that? Because that's in your book.
Yes.
That's in one of your books. What are those seven relationship muscles?
Yeah. Well, there's a number of them. Well, there's a relationship we have to reality. There's a relationship to our mind, to our emotions. But one that I like to talk about when we're doing podcasts like this is maybe the stickiest one, the juiciest one, and the hardest one is your relationship to your past. Okay. A lot of us need to do some work on the baggage that we have accumulated from our past relationships. Because if we don't, we sort of bring it with us. And I sort of joke that you can get up, you can end up in a relationship like a menage a trois from hell, meaning it's me and you and my past. And the three of us are in this together, right? So most of us, unless you're a little baby in the maternity ward, have got some baggage, right? We've been betrayed, hurt, lied to, ghosted, gaslighted, deceived, right? And some people have been really through some significant trauma, okay? So there's a spectrum of baggage, but we've all got some. So there's nothing wrong with having it. It's what you're doing with it. Yeah. Now, what I challenge people to think of it is like this. The past is something you'll never forget. Things happen to you, okay? But the past can be something that happened, or it can be something that's happening. Like, it's still alive in me. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So I've been cheated on by three women or three men or whatever the situation for the viewer here. So there's a new person standing right in front of you. You're going to be suspicious. Mm-hmm. You're going to be guarded because the last three have broken your heart, right? You're going to be guarded. You might have a wall. You might have to put this wall up to protect you, but walls will keep you safe, but they'll keep you single because people can't get through them either, mm-hmm. right? They can't get through to hurt, but they can't get through to love. Okay. Mm-hmm. So when you've been through some things, you need to do the work to come into harmony with your past, to learn the lessons that it was there to teach you, to find forgiveness for yourself, for them, for the situation, to get to the place where you have a clean emotional slate. Like, I don't know if you know this or not, but I've got a huge golf background in my life. I used to be a professional golfer, right? Okay. So I have these dual lives things. Oh. Now I'm 61, so I'm sort of retired from the golf thing. But all of sports psychology is simply trying to help an athlete put the last pitch or at bat or point behind them and then go into this next point or pitch or at bat or shot mm-hmm. with a clean slate without any thought about what, you know, I haven't gotten a hit in 30 at bats and you're in the batter's box. Well, you can't hit the ball with all that alive in you. Yeah. Yeah. So all of sports psychology is, can you clear away all the stuff that happened in the past and just be present here and be in this moment? And that gives you the best chance at allowing your talent to show up. Well, that is such a true statement about relationships, is you have all that stuff. And if it's still alive in you, you're going to sabotage yourself. You're going to be guarded when maybe you don't need to be. You're going to be suspicious and give off, you know, kind of a negative kind of, I don't know if I trust you. You're going to have trust issues, basically, right?
Right.
And people can feel that. They can feel that you're saying, come, but stay away. Yes. Or they can feel that the relationship is progressing at a slower level than it probably needs to, because that fear's alive in you. So all of that is just normal, natural human stuff. But you got to work through it. You got to as best you can, so that you can stand in front of a new person and see them for who they are, instead of seeing them through all the things that have happened to you.
Yeah.
So now I'm relating with you. Mm-hmm. I'm not relating with you through my past. Mm-hmm. Right. So I think everybody understands that. The question is, well, God, how do I let go of what my ex did, or to what happened when I was a child, or to all the goofy ghosting, gaslighting things that happen with online dating that have just kind of shut my heart down. Yeah. The idea is to live with that open, available heart. And of course, that's what you do. I'm sure that's what I do as a coach, mm-hmm. is help people kind of clean away some of that so that they can just be present in life and allow life to go as it can. So that's just one of the muscles.
Okay? Yeah, no, I love that. I love that you equated that to sports psychology, because a lot of times when I talk to athletes, and you're an athlete yourself, the biggest thing is when they start doing like centered breathing or yoga or realizing how to be in the moment in that sport arena. And then the same thing with dating, like you can literally just be in that moment, take every moment for what it is rather than putting all our projections on. And it takes a lot of practice, a lot of training, and the best experts mess it up sometimes.
Yeah.
But you just try to get back on it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's a huge muscle. Just briefly, another one is like the communication muscle. Most of us have to make a choice if we're going to be a revealer or a concealer. Like sometimes when I'm doing these things or speaking, you know, on a stage or something, I ask the crowd, you know, would you rather be in a relationship that's characterized by authenticity and transparency and openness or honesty? Or would you like to be in a relationship that's characterized by playing games and withholds and half-truths and deception? And everyone says, oh, I want the authentic thing. Until they learn what that actually means. To be authentic means that you don't just share the things that you think the other person would find attractive. You sort of reveal the things about you that maybe even you don't like so much. Like, I don't want someone to know I've got an anger problem, or that sometimes I drink too much, or that I'm insecure, or that I've got kind of a high maintenance side to me, or something like that, right? So there's a big decision on whether you want to be a revealer or a concealer. I sort of call it redactive dating. Like, you know, when the government comes out with some big thing that's released by the CIA, but all the good stuff is blacked out, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. So they're controlling what you see and what you don't.
Yeah.
That's how we date a lot of times. I'm going to show you the things I want you to see mm-hmm. to get you to like me, but I'm going to withhold, or at least, yeah, I don't want you to know some of the other things that you might judge me for. You might misunderstand, right? Yeah. Now, I'm not saying on the first date you just pour out everything that's ever happened to you. Of mm-hmm. course not. Mm-hmm. But we all know that tendency to kind of show the parts that we think people will like and not. And we get in these dynamics of, you know, concealing and playing games rather than saying, hey, okay, here I am, right? I mean,
yeah. And Roy, right, and so. Do you think that what I've seen is that sets you up for not feeling unconditionally accepted or unconditionally regarded? Beautiful. So now you really don't truly feel loved because you think they love you for part of it.
Man,
you.
Are we on the same page? That's yeah. exactly right.
Yeah.
Right. When if I'm only showing you this part of me, well, I sort of know you fell in love with the image.
Yeah.
And I never get to feel secure. Mm-hmm. It's only, and I call it dating naked. You know, even Adam and Eve in the garden in the Bible, you know, says they were Adam and his wife were both in the garden. They were naked and unashamed. Mm. And that doesn't mean they didn't have clothes. It's a spiritual mythical kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It means there was no secrets. They were exposed. They were bare before each other. They were, hey, what you see is what you get.
Yeah.
Warts and all, here I am. And there was no shame. There was like, I see you and I love you. Yeah, I see all of you, Adam. I see all of you, Eve. And you know, that's what we're looking for. But most of us are too afraid to be naked when we're dating. Right?
Yes. And I think it's important for everyone to know that, just as you're saying, that people actually find it very attractive when you see behind their mask. And if you're going to be doing that for them, you'd want to let them do that for you as well, so that yeah. the attraction is mutual. But yeah. that's a big piece of it, especially.
Really, right. And yeah. it's really hard to do because most of us are so afraid of rejection, yeah. which leads you to a deeper thing. The only way that you can really date naked and just love who you are, warts and all, and just not hide anything, is if you know that sort of behind the scenes, you are grounded into something. You're like, you're in a relationship that can't be damaged. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm married to life. I'm married to God. Like, I'm grounded mm-hmm. into something that's
something, yes.
deeper than you. Like, I don't need you to like me. It'd Ooh, be great yes. if we're together, mm-hmm. but I don't need it because I'm already in a relationship. I'm already, yeah, I'm already grounded and connected. I feel one with life. Mm-hmm. So that just gives me the freedom to say, okay, well, if you, here I am, here I'm naked. Do you like what you see?
Yeah.
If you don't, that's okay.
Yeah.
I'll wait until someone looks at me and says, I love all those things about you. I can handle that. There's no problem. Right? Now you're in an unconditional, loving relationship. Yeah. But it's hard to get past that fear of rejection, that fear of being judged, because we too often need a person to want us.
Right, which goes back to child dynamics too, because
yes.
a lot of times parents will show, particularly mothers, will show that they need a child rather than wanting them there, rather yeah. than inviting them there. And then yep. they feel stifled and want to run away. They'll people please for a while, then they'll resent it, then they'll run away. Same thing with relationship dynamics. If you feel, yeah. show that you need them rather than just wanting them, they don't yeah. feel as autonomous. They don't feel as free. So right. it just goes back right. to what we talked about earlier.
Yeah, you yeah. see all the parts that are in play in this. And that's why I think it's easy. If you want a mediocre relationship, you don't have to do this work. If you just want to find someone where you kind of tolerate each other and don't kill each other, anybody can do that. If you want something magnificent, you mm-hmm. sort of have to be on a path of self-awareness and growth yeah. and doing your work
yeah.
so that you can create something healthy and sustainable. And that's why I wrote the book about relationship boot camp, right? Some hardcore training for life, love, and the pursuit of intimacy.
Love. I think, do you agree that it takes a lot of grace giving. Like you have to give someone a lot of grace because, you know, take a Roy who's an expert, you know, I'm sure you have a blip once every couple of months or something where you're not exactly on track. So I feel like it takes a lot of grace to sustain long-term relationships. You've got to give grace to get it back.
Right. Absolutely. Well, the more that you sort of know how neurotic you are, the more you kind of know your own junk. When you see somebody else's junk, you're like, yeah, you're neurotic too. All right, let's have some fun with this. Can we play with this? Can we support each other sort of waking up and working on it? But it's pretty hard to point the finger when you know that those three fingers are pointing back at you, right? It's only when we have some sort of inflated view of ourselves, like the ego has blinded us to our own insecurities, our own problems, that we get judgmental and harsh. So the more you know you're human, the more it's like, okay, if that person's human. Yeah. And that is an acceptance is kind of a bedrock foundation of a decent relationship.
Yeah, I love that. So I do want to end it on this because you have some irresistible attractive qualities that you like to talk about, and I'm sure everybody wants to hear about them. So to you, in your opinion, from this work that you've done, what are the irresistible qualities that make people attractive?
What I would say for masculine people, and of course the masculine feminine thing right now, there's a lot of caveats in our world going on, but if you can just give me some space to say that, I find if I want to put it in one word for masculine people, when they know what it means to be present, to have presence with a feminine creature, when they know how to pay attention, when they have kind of an ability to contain or hold with their energetic presence, when they're like a river's got deep, wide banks, the feminine's on at the water. Like when you can contain and be present and not afraid of the feminine flow, you know, when you can really be there and you're all there, I think the feminine finds that unbelievably sexy. It's like, he gets me, right? And anytime a woman would say to her girlfriends, this guy gets me, that she's in love. I mean, you know, because that's what the feminine so much wants, is to feel like he can handle me. He appreciates me. He sees me. He really sees me because he's not distracted in his head and lost. And when he's with me, he's with me. Now the reciprocal I'd say in a word is trust. When I find a woman say, I trust you, like I believe in you, like I believe that you're about more than your own ego, that you are bringing your presence to affect our relationship toward greater love, greater consciousness, greater expansion. And it's not about you and your own little needs. So a woman's trusting her vulnerability, that kind of stuff. But again, that's why we have to work on these muscles, because to trust based upon your past, that's not easy to do. Okay. To be vulnerable and to be so unguarded and to have your heart so exposed, well, based upon your past, that might be difficult.
Yeah.
Okay. So sometimes we have to do some work so that those attractive qualities, and men too, men have to learn how to be present. No one teaches us how to do this stuff. So we have to do some work so we can strengthen some of these most desirable qualities, because when we do, if a man's present, he's not going to be single very long. I mean, if he knows what that means. And before we run, can I offer the viewer like a free gift?
Please, yes.
Okay. So just as we've been talking about, in my mind, the key to a healthy, sustainable relationship is your relationship fitness level, how strong your relationship muscles are.
Yeah.
Well, what is your current fitness level? Like right now, wouldn't you kind of want, I wonder how relationally fit I am? Because if you know how fit you are, well, then now at least you know what you need to work on, right? So on my website, coachingwithroy.com, is something called the Relationship Fitness Self-Assessment Test. It's free. It's like a 30-question true-false test. It's very accurate, unfortunately. Well, most of us need to get in better shape, and the test is liable to tell you that you need to get in better shape.
Yeah.
But it's totally confidential, but you immediately get your results, and you're put into a fitness category based upon the algorithms and all the stuff that I don't understand, right? So if you want a great relationship, you ought to start with what fitness level am I in right now? And then I could work with you and put a program together to get you in shape so that you're going to be able to achieve your goal, which is that healthy relationship. Okay. Uh-huh. So coachingwithroy.com, take that fitness test, get an idea where you are right now.
Roy, you are so impactful. Honestly, so much that you said was so profound. I'm in total alignment with you as far as my history of coaching and couples therapy.
It feels that way. Yeah.
Yes. And I'm really, really grateful that you came on and shared so many gems with us. Everyone go to coachingwithroy.com and I will talk to you soon, Roy.